as something that I think affects all of us in all of our lives, all the events we go through, the kind of relationships we have with friends, with family, academic institutions, and learning, and that is honesty. I've chosen the Agarita because it's a great topic. Also, over the past number of weeks, we've learned pretty intense Agaritas. This is a lighter one. So that'll be nice to do a lighter Agarita, at least to get the semester started before we return to our often more trying Agaritas. This Agarita tells a really nice story. And as with any Agarita, which appears in the Gemara, Chazal wrote it, and they were Gedolim Sheba Olam, and they wanted to teach us certain important lessons. And it's often the case that a superficial reading of any Gemara, Lamdas or Agarita, doesn't always quite get you where you need to go. And we need to look at the Agarita more carefully to kind of see what the Baal Agarita meant to teach us. So let's start it. The key question we need to ask ourselves as we go through the Agarita is, what is the maskana of the sugya, so to speak? That is, what is the Agarita ultimately driving at? What's its thesis about truth-telling? So Amar Rava, you have it. This is Sadi Zayin Amad Aleph in Sanhedrin. I actually came across this Gemara in a Gemara share I was giving in my shul. Amar Rava, Meresh Hava Amina. I used to think, Leka Kushta Ba'alma. There is no truth in the world. Until V'amri Lay, Rav Tavyume Shmei, until Rav Tavyume told me, Di Yavi Yavile Kol Chalole Da'alma Lohava Meshane B'dibure. If some were to give him all of the wealth that fills the void of the world, I would never change my words. So that's the introduction. The image here, to my mind, is like Diogenes. Who knows who Diogenes was? Name sound familiar to you? Great Cynic philosopher who lived during the time of Plato. And he was famous or infamous, as the case may be, for holding a lamp lit during the daytime and searching for a man of truth, searching for honesty. He was a founder of the Cynic school of Cynic philosophers, Kishmom Kain Hu. They were cynical about a lot of things, very critical of society and its luxuries and the superficialities of life. And Diogenes in particular was a kind of a social critic in his life. That is, he did all kinds of weird things to demonstrate the follies of organized, wealthy society. And one of the things he did to demonstrate his conviction that people aren't truth tellers is like go around with a flashlight during the daytime. You need a flashlight during the daytime? No. But look, where is there ever a man of truth? So, and probably never found one. In any case, Rav is saying, I never thought I could find truth in the world. So, until he met with this Rav Tavyume. What's the meaning of this Rav's name? Good day. Interesting name. Anybody here have the name Good Day? No?
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
What?
Yom Tov.
Yom Tov, yeah. Maybe he comes from here. Could be, actually. Yom Tov Lipman Heller. Right? Maybe he comes from here. But that's not a common name. And right off the bat, it suggests that, you know, maybe the story as it unfolds, while the pshat is that it definitely took place, it probably did, but certain names here seem to ramify beyond themselves. And it's kind of curious that this person's name was Rav Tavyume, a very uncommon name for sure in Shas. And he says, now that I've met with this Rav Tavyume, got it. There are people who are honest. What's the evidence for that? How does Rava know that Rav Tavyume is telling the truth? Meresh hava amina, let's look at this. I always thought there was no truth in the world until Rav Tavyumi came and said, I'm a truth teller. Do you see the problem? What's the logical problem here?
How does that answer the question?
Why should he believe him? If you are under the cynical assumption, as a Meresh Hava Amina, Leka Kushta Ba'alma, until Rav Tav Yomei came along and said, I always told the truth. But why would he believe him? See? It's a problem, right? Any solutions? It's funny. Yes?
Maybe you got the name Tav Yomei from being the type of person who's not a cynic, but a truthful guy.
That's and a good suggestion. Maybe he isn't. Right? Tav Yomei doesn't necessarily mean truth-telling, though. It just means a good day. You know, he's kind of like a ray of sunshine in a dim world like we have outside today, rainy, dreary. Tav Yomei kind of brings light to the world, brings goodness to the world. Yes?
I guess theoretically, since Tav Yomei said, if you give me all the money in the world, I wouldn't veer from with my words, maybe that's something that could be tested. If you try to bribe the individual and see if you can get him to say something that's slightly off.
Okay, great point. Great point. And then the story, the Agadita as it unfolds, provides a test to Rav Tav Yomei. From the perspective of learning up this Agadita, it's not clear at what point Rava believed that Rav Tav Yomei was a truth-teller. As it could be that we need the following story to make that case, and that his assertion alone was insufficient. It's not clear how it flows. But as you are right in the sense that as the Agadita unfolds, a story happens and Rav Tav Yomei is tested. So maybe Rav is making the claim only after heard the whole story, and not just after he saw or heard what Rav Tav Yomei said about himself. That's possible, though it's not the simple mashmaos of the Gemara. That's possible. Yes.
So, another point I would say is that Rav's havamina is that leka kushta ba'alma, there's no truth. Now, his havamina is a strange havamina. To say that there's only lies and no truth anywhere. So even the beginning of the havamina is a strange havamina. Like that Rava would believe that there's absolutely no truth.
Well, as I say, that's why he reminds me of a Diogenes-like figure who was very cynical about the human condition. It's not that Rava believed that nobody ever told the truth. That's not the claim. It's that absolute truth is elusive. And that while sometimes people, often maybe people, but we can say for sure truth is always there, and it could be a deeper claim, by the way. When people, there are different ways that people lie. One is to others, and perhaps even more importantly, it's to yourself. In other words, people go around living the life that they live and appearing as if they are such and such, but is it always the case that a person's appearance reflects his true inner reality? You know, there are people who look very, very frum, for example. But if you poke a little deeper, that frum appearance turns out to mask somebody who's not so frum or is not so sincere. You know, you can shake a lot when you daven. Doesn't mean that you're really davening with a lot of kavanas. So I think Rav is also speaking about truth within once, although that's not how the Agadita unfolds, but I think that's a part of Kushta. People are being truly honest. You can translate Kushta also as authentic, that is honesty within oneself, and is there real authenticity in human, within a person? And also in human relationships. If I say to you, that was a brilliant point you made, and I don't really think that, that was a wonderful point you made, but if I don't really think that, then it's the same thing. In other words, that's I could say certain things and not fully believe them just to grease the wheels of social intercourse, and that is problematic. So, and we'll see how the story unfolds. We'll see a living example of what constitutes kushta and the variations thereof. So this is all by way of just getting into the story. Yes?
Kushta is a word that's used for both the internal consistency and for relationships with other people. When we say like shel atzmacha v'yachpach shel acher, right? To be internally consistent. So that's the same word, kushta.
Yeah, right? That's interesting. Yeah, right. Okay, that's an interesting comment. Okay, let's see how it unfolds. I just wanted to raise the question. Now let's see how it goes. Zimna chada, one time, ikloi lahu asra. So now Rav Tav Yomei tells Rava this story. So it could be that In other words, he's describing something that happened to him. Zimnachad ikla'i, I went. So he's telling Rava a story. So it could be that Rava's conclusion that Rav Tavyumi is an honest man derives from the story, although as we'll see, that gets complicated. Okay? But he's relating to a story to Rava that happened to him personally. Ikla'i lahu asra v'kushtashme. And I came to a town, and the town's name, lo and behold, was Kushta. That's pretty cool. Velohavu mishane b'diburayhu, and they never told a lie. They never changed their words one iota from reality. Whatever they said was always consistent with reality. Velohava mayis inish mihasim, below zimne. And no person in that town died before his time. Everybody lived to the fullness of their life, 120 years, whatever that is, and nobody ever died before their time. All right, that's pretty interesting. So what about the name of the town? Kushta. So how do you read that? Did it get the name because everybody told the truth? In other words, it was really Queens, but nobody called it Queens because it happened to have the reputation where everybody told the truth, right? That's one possibility, that it got the name from the moral character of the people, right? It's one possibility. But here we have this Rav Tavyome, unusual name, and we have Eretz Kushta, unusual name. So is there another way to read it that, given the, I guess, the unlikelihood that we have a Rav Tavyomi and an Eretz Kushta, yes?
Not that they got the name because of the people, but because of the name that shaped who they were. In other words, the place was called the place of truth, and that through a certain responsibility of the...
That's an interesting idea. An interesting idea that the name helped shape the people.
People's names.
Right, right? I know. I don't know, though, that the name of the town would be of sufficient potency to render everybody perfect truth tellers, as we'll see. So it's an interesting suggestion, and I think that there's truth to that idea, but I don't know that it's sufficient to explain how everybody was so pure. So where am I going with this? Is that I would say the pshat is that this actually took place, but if you look at it from a literary perspective, it has the quality of a fable. What is a fable?
Something that's not true?
Not necessarily. Fable could be true. But a fable is a story whose purpose is to teach a Musar Haskel, to teach a moral lesson, like Aesop's fables. Fables are stories designed to educate. And it could be that Rav Tavyomi was really his name, and Rav Kushta was really the name of the town, but the coincidences here are such that it has a fable-like quality, which it might be, I'm saying, the pshat is that this is true, but it has a fable-like quality. In other words, what I think is really happening here is that this Agadot is a story designed to teach us a moral lesson, and the names are suggestive of that goal. In general, Chazal, my view of Agadot in general is that, I mean, Chazal didn't write stories, and you know there are many, many Agadotas with stories in Shas. They weren't fiction writers. They weren't trying to get published in the New Yorker. That wasn't their goal. What was their goal? What was Chazal's goal? To make us better people, make us better Jews. So everything they wrote had an educative purpose. The fable-like quality, to my mind, illuminates the idea that there's a Musar Haskel here, that Rava and this whole Gemara wanted to teach us something, and it's our job to figure out what he wants to teach us. Yes?
Yeah, it's ironic that he would want to teach about truth by saying, oh, by the way, I met this person from this place called Truth, when the whole thing was to be a fable.
Well, first of all, I say fables could be true, and I'm not saying it's not literally not the case, but I'm also suggesting that, let me ask you, is fiction lying? A work of fiction professes to be fiction. Is it a tissue of lies?
Yes. Harry Potter is a lie.
It professes to be fiction.
What? Harry
Potter is a lie.
Yeah. Is it a lie? Would you consider, it's an interesting question. Would you
yes and no.
What way is it a lie?
That's like saying a satire.
The stories literally didn't happen. But the broader truths in the story.
So let me ask you the following question. On Purim, when you if you dress up as a Hasidic person on Purim, are you lying? No, why not? Because the context, Purim, makes it clear that this is a, you know, a Purim shtick. So if something is offered as fiction, then it's not a lie, it's a different genre, it's fiction. Fiction doesn't profess to be truth-telling, it professes to be maybe truth-telling in a very deep level about human nature, about character, about moral dilemmas, but not about events that actually took place. So it's not necessarily a lie, it's a vehicle for, it's a literary vehicle for conveying certain deep truths, even if they don't correspond to any reality. By the way, I think the pshat is that this probably took place. I'm just suggesting that the names are there to telegraph that. You, the learner of this Agadata, you know, I've got a message for you, because this is very interesting, with Kushta and Tavyume and so on. Okay, any case. So, what do we know about this town, that they, lo mishanadi, but they're totally honest, and is it a good thing or a bad thing?
How do you know that when it says they didn't change their words, it means that they didn't, maybe it means like for good and bad, meaning we think they're saying, oh, and we always told the truth, right? Maybe it's just we're brutally honest.
We're going to come to that in a second. Well, very good point. Excellent. Let's see how the story unfolds. So, but it's a very, very good point. But come back to it afterwards. But let, so far, if I were to ask you, is this Eretz Kushta, the author, the Bala Gadata, is he saying Eretz Kushta is a good place or not a good place? What? Is he implying? Well, what do we know about the people of Kushta? Well, they never die early, right?
No so, one dies early. We know everyone has their predestined time or whatever.
If it's child, yeah, but that's not what the Gemara means. The Gemara means before you would expect such a person to die. In other words,
don't
old age.
You'll see
how the story unfolds. Like children die later, but so that's shelo bizmano. In other words, if a person dies young, then that the Gemara means that to be shelo bizmano. So early death. You see somebody unfortunately dies at age 30, 40, 20, chas v'shalom, and that's an early death. So that's what the Gemara means. So I'm asking you, what is the Baal Agadata's attitude towards Eretz Kushta? If nobody dies early and everybody lives until 120, sounds like a pretty ringing endorsement of Eretz Kushta, right? Yeah, it's like a cool place. That's where I want to live. You know, you live a long life. Nobody dies before their time.
It's still unclear. Because, again, it could be a mile of that. Because they tell the truth, whether it's good or bad, therefore they die at their determined time. It's not because they are good people and they tell the truth, therefore they live a long life.
There's obviously a causal relation between telling the truth and living a long life. That's what
telling
the Gemara...
Telling the truth could even be, I guess you could say, negative.
Like we'll see. I gotta go, let's not jump the gun. I want to take it step by step. If I were to ask you, and there's a method to my madness, because we need to come back and analyze the whole thing. But right now, I think you'd have to infer, right, that this is a good place to be. People who tell the truth all the time, they never die early. It's like a tremendous bracha from Hashem. Hashem gives you a bracha. If you always tell the truth, you'll never die early. And that's the case of this entire town. Okay, let's continue. Nesibe Itza Minhon. So, Rav Tavyumi, being this like world-class truth-teller, said, this is where I want to settle. So I married one of the women of Eretz Kushta. Vahavoli Tartin Benin Mina. And I had two children from her. And now, the critical part of the story unfolds. Yom Achada, one day, Yom Achad, Hava Yasva Debisu Vikachaifa Resha. His wife was sitting and she was washing her hair. Asai Shivavasa, neighbors came, Tarfa Adasha, and they knocked on the door. They wanted to schmooze, visit with Mrs. Truth Teller. Savar, so Rav, Mrs. Tavyume, I should say. So Savar, Rav Tavyume, thought, Lav orach ara. It's not sneis. It's not derech eretz. I mean to say, oh, she's in the shower. Amar Allah. So he said to the neighbor, Lessa Hacha. She's not here. Uh-oh. Right. This is Rav Tavyumi, who said of himself that he never was Mishane Dibure. This is Rav Tavyumi, who convinced Rava that there exists an honest man in the world. And here he was Mishane Dibure. He wasn't perfectly honest. So this gets complicated. What happens? Shechivu le tartin benin. Two kids die. Boom. Tells a little lie, boom, two of his kids die. Which is, of course, exactly what's not supposed to happen in Eretz Kushta. Children dying is for people to die before their time. And the immediate result of his being Mishana Diburaya for Tznius, for Derech Arachara, Derech Eretz, you know, not to reveal that his wife's in the shower, the immediate result is his children's death. I have to say, that sounds pretty draconian, wouldn't you say? I mean, like, okay, you know, give them a break. Maybe let them live until they're 60 instead of 120. But like, boom, to die right afterwards. What is that? Also, it's pretty odd, right, isn't it? I can't wait to understand that. Let's finish, we'll come back and analyze it, but let's finish the story. Asu inshe da astra lakame. So now the town folk come to him. Okay, there's a stir in the community. Two little kids died. That never happened. Amrule, they said to him, "My hi, what's going on here? What happened?" Amraluhu, he said to them, "Hachi hava hamaisa." This is what happened. Amrule, bimatusa binach puk be asrin. Lotagri buhu musna bahanach inshi. Get out of here. Leave the town so that you don't cause any further deaths. And so Rav Tavyume is exiled from Eretz Kushta. Thus ends the Agadita. We are left kind of hanging. Right? So the ultimate, I mean, the most fundamental question is, what is the maskana of the sugya? Was Rav Tavyume right, or was Rav Tavyume wrong? And was it a good thing for him to be Mishana Diburayu for purposes of Tznius, or was it a bad thing for him to do that? What's the evidence from the Agadita? And we need to go back and say, you know, remember when I asked you, how did Rava know that Rav Tavyume was an honest person? If it was only by his own testimony, if he was suspicious of all people, he would be suspicious of this person too. I said, well, maybe it's the story itself that demonstrates that Rav Tavyume is a perfectly honest person. But what's the problem with that answer? Was Rav Tavyume a perfectly honest person? He was Mishana Diburayu. So what seems like a really pretty, simple, lovely agadita, as you analyze it more carefully, ends up raising more questions in a way than it answers. So that's where we are. Yes.
Maybe he kept to his point, and maybe his original point wasn't that you never change your words, but that you never change your words in regard to yourself. But when it has to do with someone else, then that's different. Because there are
Okay, it's an interesting suggestion. I'm going to develop that in a minute, but let me get some other ideas. Yes.
This just seems like a little distorted truth, meaning we know that there are certain times, like we've seen in the Gemara, that a Talmud Chacham is allowed to change his words. So just because it's truth doesn't mean you should say it or you have to say it. So it seems like it's truth, but not halachic.
Great, good. I'm going to come back to that. I see a few hands up. I'm going to come back to all your points. Go ahead, we'll just go around the room. Yes,
just to build on Ozzy's saying, I think you even mentioned it in previous year about even in the Torah we have precedents, once in Bereishis by Beis Lavan, and also by
Sarah.
Recently went up, Sarah also, and also recently Chaim Shmarach says, tell part of that you're going out for a few days to be Zoveach, but really they're leaving.
That was a subject of my Devar Torah in Shul like 2 weeks ago, the morality of that.
So we have precedents for...
Exactly. Okay, good, very good. I'm just going to go around the room. We'll come back. You're all saying very good points. Yes, Mordechai.
You mentioned something earlier about context. So I don't think we see anywhere else except for Eretz Kushta, that this severe, draconian, immediate, it might be in the context of Eretz Kushta that this was inappropriate, because the context was such that everybody assumed every statement was literal truth. That might not be generalizable to anywhere outside of Kushta.
Right, okay, good point. Excellent, yes?
2 points. One, a very simple point, just on I agree with all the questions. In terms of Tavyomi saying, Rava saying this Tavyomi was an honest person, it could be that Tavyomi learned from what happened in Kushta that, oh, I really shouldn't, you know, change my words at all. And so now Rava, hearing the report from Rav Tavyomi, Rav Tavyomi now says, yeah, like, I don't change my words anymore. So you could say that the
that's interesting. I never thought about that. That maybe Rav Tavyomi was booted out of Eretz Kushta and did tshuva and became a kind of a walking Diogenesian figure with a lamp, is always telling the truth. Possible. I would say it's an interesting suggestion. I don't. It's not the way I read it, but okay.
The other point coming up, what you just said, that it sounds like the context or Kushta was, you know, this very interesting place. It's like its own sphere. Where
a never land of truth.
Where, yeah, it's almost like this dangerously utopian society.
Right.
This kind of paradise where you have to abide by those rules, otherwise you're subject to this really intense scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems very idealistic.
Right. There's something unreal about Eretz Kushta. It's unreal in two senses. First of all, the idea that everybody... I mean, there is no place on the planet Earth where everybody lives until 120. So right off the bat, Eretz Kushta seems like an unreal place. It's a kind of a fabulous, utopian, never land of world, of a little corner of the world where everybody tells the perfect truth and where people live until 120. So it has an unreal quality to it. The other piece of that unreality is, you know, I mean, Rav Tavyomi just wanted to protect his wife, Sneas. For two kids to die? Does that not sound exceedingly harsh? It's as if, you know, Eretz Kushta is this, like, never land of perfect truth where people live forever, but it has its very dire, harsh consequences. And by the way, what happened to Rav Tavyomi's wife? Did she go into Gullis with him? Doesn't say. It just sounds like he left. Doesn't say. Could be his wife divorced him. In other words, his wife is really an Eretz Kushta, right, person. This is where she was raised. She's pure, perfect truth-telling. Why are you telling lies about me? It's okay if you say I'm in the shower. So Rav Tavyomi seems to like be in kind of a permanent exile, not only from this ideal Eretz Kushta, this land of fantastical truth, but even loses his... probably loses his wife, loses his kids. And so the cost of living in Eretz Kushta is very, very, very severe. So on the one hand, Eretz Kushta is portrayed as this idyllic world where nobody dies before their life. On the other hand, it's not a world that people can really live in except if you're Eretz Kushta. As you said, the context, unless you're a Kushtaite, where you can live that life, but the average person can't. And this really comes back to a point that a number of you made, which is that, first of all, halacha is mutu l'shanos t'man ha-shalom. Halacha is mutu l'shanos t'man ha-gemar bav mitzia. Kate, what you were referring to, you know, you had three things that a Talmud Chacham was allowed to lie. You mentioned that, allowed to lie about. You had Bar Mitzia, three issues of Talmud Chacham allowed to lie about. The famous sugya of Kate and Rakdim Lefnei Akala. You know, how do you praise a Kala? She's as ugly as sin. What are you supposed to say? So, Kala na v'chasuda, you know, you don't say, oh, you're as ugly as sin. You know, you're kind of like the case of Sari Meinu, where Sari said, Adoni Zakein and Hashem changed in the Torah to I was old, because it was embarrassing and negative about Avram. So, the halacha is, and there are many, many sources for this, these I just mentioned a few, Mutu L'shanos L'man HaShalom. So, what we have, in effect, are two worlds in which human beings could conceivably live. There was the world of Kushta, which has this fantastical quality of perfect truth and also no death prior to one's time. And then there is the world which we all inhabit, which Rav Tov Yume is ultimately exiled to, where, by the way, some say not only mutter, but chayiv l'shanos, mitzvah l'shanos aman ha-shalom. Because if I were to tell every person I come, any of us were to tell any person we come across the truth all the time, people would argue, oh, I hate that dress that you're wearing to your wife. It looks ugly. Or the new shetel you got is just abysmal. I mean, can you imagine what that's going to do to Shalom Bias? Or, you know, your friend comes into the room and you're learning b'chavrusa and you say, well, that is the dumbest svara I've ever heard in my entire life. I don't want to ever learn with you again. Maybe some people say that. But maybe it's not the best thing to say. In other words, social relationships require a certain degree of grease, of oil, to make it possible for people to live with one another. And that is important. Let me put it in broader, you might say, hashkafic or philosophical terms. There are two values that come into context. There's MS and there is shalom. MS requires, is the Eretz Kushtaite model. Everything is perfect truth. But shalom is also a value, right? Shalom is also very, very important. And so how do you adjudicate between these two values? Now, think about Eretz Kushta people. How were they on Shalom? I don't really know, but what did they do to Rav Tov Yume? They booted him out. Why didn't they say, well, if you want to live here, you need to fix your ways and say your wife's in the shower, if she's in the shower. Like, why didn't they say that? Because in Kushtaville, Shalom was less important. Or at least, you know, they wanted to retain perfect purity, and they wouldn't allow anybody to like try to improve himself, do tshuva, you know, work his way into Eretz Kushta. He was out. So shalom was not as great a value in Eretz Kushta, at least shalom as we know it in our society. But of course, this also, you see with me? So you have these competing values, and when we ask you what the maskana of the sugya is, if you look at it in these terms, how do you see the maskan of the sugya? Let me just focus on that for a minute. How do you see the maskan of the sugya? Was Rav Tov Yume right or wrong from the perspective of the sugya to lie about where his wife was? Answer that question. Yes.
I mean, did he really lie? He said she's not here. I mean, she's not right here at the front door.
Okay. It wasn't true. It wasn't perfect truth. You're right. I mean, you know, you could interpret it in different ways, but it was like, that's, by the way, when it comes to Ibn Ezra, on the question that you mentioned about Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem says they'll go out in 3 days. So the Ibn Ezra says, but he never said they'd return. They can leave for 3 days, but they can stay longer too. But the Mefarshim ask on the Ibn Ezra, which is the obvious question, deception is in the eye of the deceiver, not in the eye of the person who articulated the words. Whatever the person, if the person who said the words knew that the person he was talking to would interpret in one way, and he exactly what he didn't intend, then that's deception. So it's still deception, and it's, you know, the Ibn Ezra, which is like what you're saying, is like what you're saying, like the Ibn Ezra, but it's you know, deception, I don't think, works that way. That's the way the person, you know, she's not around, you know. Yes.
So in terms of
what's the maskana de sugya? That's what I want to focus on.
So it sounds like from the takeaway of the Gemara is that, I don't know if I would call it right or wrong as opposed to just realistic. That Rav Tov Yume, what he did was a realistic, reasonable, expected response to his situation. But in Kushta, there's a high cost for not telling the truth.
So, for you and me, we who do not live in Eretz Kushta, what would the norm be?
I think Rav endorses this.
Yes. So, very good, Mardukhan. Very, very good. That's how I started this year. That's what is Rav's position? Remember, I asked you, Akasha, how could he know that Rav Tov Yume is a truth teller merely because of his saying, I tell the truth? It could be that the whole story Rava was really reacting to the whole story. Just remember, Rav Tavyomi told Rava the story, and Rav Tavyomi, what he saw in Rav Tavyomi after the whole story was told was, A, here's a man who really wants to tell the truth. He wanted to live in Eretz Kushta. This is the place for him. He married. And yet he was smart enough to know that there's some times when you can't preserve absolute Kushta, and that Rav Tavyomi, listen, hear me out, Rav Tavyomi is a model of true Kushta as it should be lived in the real world. Because Rav Tavyomi did the right thing. He aspires to Kushta, but recognizes that there are certain times when Kushta must be compromised because of other values, like in this particular case, Snias or Derech Eretz for his wife. And therefore, it could be that Rava is saying, you guys have a wrong conception of truth as it should be lived in this world. Eretz Kushta is a fantastical neverland of truth where people never die, like Peter Pan, you know, it's like Peter... people never die. But that's not our world. Our world is Rav Tavyumi's world, who aspires, but knows that sometimes you can't live that way. And truth is not, in other words, the emes, the kushta. Kushta that Rava's advocating is not the kushta of Eretz Kushta. It's the kushta that makes life possible in the world, where you need to be honest, but there's sometimes you can't tell your wife, I hate your shaitan. In other words, you need to... That's Kushta. In effect, it's a rejection of the Eretz Kushta model in favor of a more shalom-oriented model of how to live truth. That would be one natural way to read the Gemara. Anybody want to agree, disagree with that? Yes.
To raise a question on that. So if this is the ultimate model, that there's fundamental truth, but at the same time, to be compromised in certain situations, then why is it that Rav Tavyumi's children had to die if really he was doing the right thing?
Good, excellent question. Very, very good question. And here Mordechai's point about context is, I think, relevant. But your question really is a segue into, I think, a key point I wanted to make, which is that if you accept my thesis that the conclusion of the Gemara is a rejection of Eretz Kushta for the world in which we live, it's only for the never-never land of Eretz Kushta that you can live that way, then the question I have for you is the following. What's the point of Eretz Kushta? And why it's held up as a certain kind of a model? Why is it held up as a model if that's not the way we're supposed to lead our lives? You with me? So let's forget the whole story. Why does the Gemara record a story about Eretz Kushta if we're not supposed to live according to the standards of Eretz Kushta? In other words, Rav Tavyomi and Rava on this reading, they're rejecting Eretz Kushta for our world. Well, if they're rejecting it, then why does the Gemara record it?
You said about anything.
What's that? Recorded to reject it? Okay, that's possible. I think there's something else going on, but yes, that's definitely a possibility. Absolutely, I agree with that. Yes?
You say that about anything. Why would we ever talk about the wrong thing if that's not what we're supposed to do? Why would we ever put on the news, you know, this person murdered this person, they went to jail? Like, why doesn't the news just show, oh, this person gave charity, oh, this person did a altruistic act of kindness?
By the way, I've often been tempted to write to CBS and say maybe like put some good news on too. So I hear that. But this is the Gemara. It's just not a news show. And the Gemara, what I'm saying is the Gemara must have had a reason for recording this concept, this fabulous concept of Eretz Kushta, not just because, you know, it's a nice place, but what is it? What's the Musar Haskil? Is it just a rejection of Eretz Kushta, which is what you're saying, which is definitely a possibility, but maybe more to it than that? Yes.
I don't think the final takeaway is pure rejection. I think that Kushta is put on this pedestal because you need to have an idea.
Very good. You want to say the same thing?
No,
very
I was
good.
Going to say that.
Perhaps. Let me build on what he said. That's what I was going to say, and then I'll take what you have to say. Yes, I think that what the Gemara wants to teach us is that we always need to have this fantastical land of Kushta as a model Because without that model of absolute truth, we will descend into the world of
Sheker.
Of Sheker, to the world of constant lies. We need to know that there is such a place called Kushta, where people do live according to this absolute standards of truth. It's not for us. In our world, it's dysfunctional. But if we didn't have a model, then we would descend into the depths of constant lying. There needs to be what I'm saying is a permanent tension between the aspiration for perfect truth and the realization that that aspiration can never and should never be more than an aspiration, because in the real world, that's not how we live. But if we didn't have that aspiration, then it would corrupt our living in the real world. We will descend into constant lies. I'll give you just an example of this. There are some gedolim who are like unbelievable masmidim, like Rav Eliashiv, Rav Eliashiv, learned constantly. That's, at some level, we're not going to live our lives that way. We don't have that incredible intensity. Our relationship with our wife when we get married requires more time than I imagine Rav Eliashiv did. I'm sure he was a fine husband, but he was learning all the time. So the real world in which we live, especially if you go get a job, you become an accountant, a lawyer, a doctor, a psychologist, whatever you do, you can't live that life. You can't. It's not our world. But if we didn't have Rav Eliashivs or people like him as models, then our own learning would eventually descend into, I'm lucky if I get 3 minutes a day. There needs to be a healthy tension. Put differently, there needs to be an unrealizable model for us to measure our lives. Not because our lives are compromised. That's the point of this Gemara. Rav Tavyumi is right on this reading. Rav is saying, Rav Tavyome, you are the Kushta model. You can't live like Eretz Kushta. You did the right thing. Mitzvah l'shanas the mother shalom. It's the right thing to do. But nevertheless, you need to keep in your mind that there is this Eretz Kushta place. I really need to think about that. You always need to measure every single word that comes out that's not totally honest. Really need to say that? Should I need to say it? Is there a way to minimize the sheker? Because there is this unrealizable, unattainable model of Kushta. And so the Gemara is, I think, teaching a very profound lesson. It's not the usual thing. Yes, you must always tell the truth. No. It's not the usual message, Laman HaShalom, you can lie. It's that, yes, Laman HaShalom, you can lie, but always, forevermore, keep imprinted vividly in your moral consciousness that there is another world. It's fabulous. It's amazing. People live long, long lives. It's like a never land of long. And you need to measure what you're doing against that. It's not your world. Like Rav Eliashiv can't be our world if we go out to work. But we need to measure our behavior and our life according to those standards that we know we can and really shouldn't ever reach in the case of honesty. So it's a much more complex and, I think, compelling picture. It's not the simplistic one, always tell the truth, or the simplistic one, Laman HaShalom, you should always lie. We need to be able to maintain a kind of dialectical tension between the ideal and the real, recognizing the ideal should not be the real, but nevertheless recognizing that we should always measure the real against the ideal. Okay. That's my read of the Gemara. Any other comments, questions? Okay.